tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 463 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Good evening.
Well, guys, another week of Tsunami, same lineup we've been having for a while now. Speaking of lineup, we did get confirmation that the prediction we made, schedule for Rooster Fighter is true. So we were right on that. They also premiered a brand new promo this weekend for the show. Any thoughts on this?
So basically, Rooster Fighter is replacing Bleach, and is also going to the top of the block. I think at that point, I think they are announced at night. I forget, but in any case, it's not too surprising. It's at midnight.
Yeah, they did. It's taking the next slot.
Yeah, and then Primal is right now is going to be at the 12:30 spot, but it only has like two episodes. So I'm kind of curious. I'm assuming Rooster Fighter being an original is going to stay where it is. And then whatever replaces Primal might go in the 12:30 slot, you know, in a couple of weeks, whatever that is, maybe Dunedin.
I think that's likely. Also note, there's no Bleach rerun. Rooster Fighter is going to rerun at the end of the block. There's no Bleach rerun.
Oh yeah.
That's right. You know what I was thinking you might be on the same page. What are you going to say, Seda?
I was going to say a Bleach rerun might show up later, like for example Zom 100, just showed up, so yeah. Who knows.
I was gonna say, I wonder if the like in Japanese for Rooster Fighter, I wonder,
is there a Japanese version?
It didn't say that, so there's no evidence to assume there is, but I just wonder because of the fact that they're showing it again on the same night. They've done that before, but to be fair, before they always did that, but they didn't.
They're usually pretty upfront about that, but we'll see, I suppose.
All right, yeah, the promo looks fine. It's Rooster Fighter. It's hard to comment on that because it just looks goofy.
There's some good puns. I feel like pluck your eyes out or something, or I forget the puns exactly, but something about like.
There was like a
plucks and other stuff, but I forget the exact puns. But there are good ones I remember. So
I forget the one about like he takes a licking, like finger licking.
Yeah.
The only other piece of news I had, and you did mention this as well, Crocodile, before we started recording, is that the 2026 Annie Awards have happened, and that Common Side Effects has actually won 3 awards. So it did really well, even though, again, it's kind of funny to talk about this because I know this isn't a Tsunami thing specifically. I mean, it appeared on Tsunami, so I guess we can talk about it.
I mean, there have been multiple shows that have been in Annie Awards that showed up Tsunami, like Invincible Fight Girl was there as well. It was nominated for some stuff and other stuff as well.
I think I'm more talking about the fact that like this show wasn't designed for Tsunami. Like it's just something we got, even though it did win like our show of the, on our awards. So,
I mean, it aired on Tsunami. That's good enough. I feel.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the awards it won were, it was in the category called TV Media Mature. And so it won Best Direction, Best Writing, and overall Best. It just won Best. The pilot episode.
Yeah. I think in the same category as like Haha You Clowns and some other stuff. So it like didn't really like it had competition technically, but it felt like it was pretty obviously gonna win, and lo and behold it did win. So
well, those would be the categories I think I would have selected, and writing specifically and direction. Okay. Actually I won 4 things. I didn't realize this. It was writing, direction, and editorial. Best editorial. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, what does best editorial mean?
I don't know.
Maybe critical or
commentary on a topic. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, okay. For the best TV media matured, other nominees were Bob's Burgers, good show. Haha, You Clowns. Never watched it. It looks kind of stupid, but it could be good. Il Baracchino, I have no idea what that is, in South Park, which I've not watched in probably like 10 or more years, so whatever. But I know it's still obviously popular.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it for the news. Not a whole lot of news this week, but Rooster Fighter is on its way. Now, I was thinking too, you know, you guys are talking about Dandadan maybe coming, but...
We keep predicting it because, I mean, first of all, it just makes sense that they would continue it, but also they already kind of teased it unconventionally, yeah. So that seems like it's got to happen at some point.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some other show they can randomly find from like 5 years ago to put on a block. Ha, you thought it was Dandadan, but it was me, Undead Unluck or something. I don't know. Undead Unluck is his old, but I'm just
going to example. You know what? That is a great example. I think that's exactly the kind of like out of left field thing I could see happening as well.
Pacing issues aside, I actually enjoyed Undead Unluck quite a bit, so I would be actually be fine if it coming to Toonami. Again, pacing issues aside, but it was just a random example I put on my ass. But
you're right; that was definitely one that I think would fit the block. All right,
just a quick moment. I wrote down, here comes that cock, pluck around and find out. Those were some of the puns I had written down about from the Rooster Fighter promo that I remembered.
Was the show supposed to be called Cockfighter?
No, Rooster, it's based on a manga called Rooster.
But was that like a translation change? Or is it just like...
I think it always had that English title, even in Japan, but I would have to double check.
Oh, okay. That's kind of what I'm asking. Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to the block proper, and let's begin with Primal.
I was just looking it up. Apparently in Japan, Rooster Fighter is called Niwatori Faita. So it's like the Japanese word for rooster, Faita. Like, whatever Faita. You call that. Like the Japanese pronunciation of the English word fighter.
The English title is not exactly the same between language. I mean, the title is not in English in both languages, but it is close enough. But that's basically a literal translation.
Yeah. Sorry.
No problem. Okay, let's begin. Primal, Season 3, Episode 6, Cavern of Horrors. All right, so... They arrive. We've got all of our protagonists are there, but Mira and Fang have the little ones kind of stay back. They're not going to go into the cave. It's too dangerous. Also, Fang kind of hangs back too. He's too big to get in there initially, I think.
Well, she did, Fang.
She. I keep saying he. You're right. It's a she. But Spear and Mira go in, and they're kind of like hiding nearby, and they kind of watch the literal horrors taking place in that pit.
A cavern, some might say.
Yeah, it's a cavern of horrors, particularly. But then, like Mira kind of notices that Spear, like, straight up stinks. Like, he's, I guess, rotting.
Yeah, I think the Warthog Wolf things notice it first, and then Mira's like, why are they approaching us? And then she, like, somehow only now realizes that actually sees a rotting dead corpse or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what a rotting corpse smells like, but I know what, like, rotting food smells like.
Yeah. So,
you know, Fang probably does not, or Spear probably does not smell very good.
No. So they hide under a bunch of bones for a moment, and that kind of conceals them. And then they get up, and, you know, Spear, you know, he's kind of making a lot of noise, and he can't do it. He can't help it. He's a zombie, but whatever. But this does give Mira an idea. So she runs back outside and she goes and makes a rope. And she's like, okay, I'm going to use this to try to get the people. You know, Spear keeps following around. And this time she tries to like tell him, like, stay, don't come, stay. And so he has to stay behind.
Yeah, Spear's not exactly stealthy, and Mira needs stealth to get this plan, quote unquote, to work. Narrator, exactly. It was a bad plan to begin with. But she tried her best.
So anyway, after the commercial break, before we cut back to Mira, we see that Spear is trying to kind of, you know, get in Fang's good graces here and tries to feed Fang, tries to give Fang water and other these things. Fang just keeps growling and yelling at him.
He's getting some memories of interactions he had with Fang in the past, and then that's kind of prompting him to try these things that worked before. but of course, for understandable reasons, Fang's not having any of it. Her children are you know, content, and they like Spear, but Fang herself is not having any of it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Mira's in the Cavern of Horrors, and she kind of waits, because there's like this cycle where the big animal eats a bunch of them, and then the smaller ones feed, and then like this cycle keeps repeating. And so she has to like wait for the right opportune moment after, during the feeding time. So she has to actually sit there and watch some more people get killed. There's really nothing she can do. Which is, that was a kind of powerful moment, I thought, in the episode, where she's kind of having to like, you see her expression on her face. She can't, she feels bad, but yeah,
she can't even, she can't bring herself to watch, which is, you know, completely understandable. And you just hear it all, you know?
Yeah. But when they start feeding, this is the opportune time. So she sneaks down, she drops the rope in, that little kid sees it, starts climbing up the rope. But then unfortunately, some of the other people down there also start clamoring for the rope, to the point that they start kind of pushing each other, and they weigh too much on the rope, and the rope breaks.
Yeah, this is what I mean by it was kind of like a bad plan, because the rest of the people, I think, were acting fairly logically. Like, you see a rope, they know they're going to get eaten, they're panicking, they're trying to all grab the rope at the same time. So yeah, like, this was kind of always going to happen. There's just no way to make everyone, hey, one at a time, everyone take it slow. That's just not a realistic way to go about this, given the context and their rational fears and agitation and whatnot. So obviously Mira was trying her best, but just a single rope was never going to work in this contest, because everyone else was not going to cooperate. And it was never going to work out this way.
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily have like a better alternative plan, but just like putting a rope down into the pit during feeding time, like, I think the chance of this working out was pretty low.
Yeah.
Maybe it was actually like something sturdy, like a ladder or something, but like, she wouldn't have had time to make one, so I don't even blame her for that. But like, just rope itself was just never going to work. It needed something to be like actually legitimately sturdy, and even then, I don't think there's no way she would have enough time to build something sturdy enough to hold the weight of multiple people on it.
No, it's a dire situation. She was probably trying to get that child out first, but anyway. For what it's worth, even though the rope does snap, she is able to get the child out, but the warthog monsters are there. By the way, the subtitles or the closed captions just call them monsters. They don't say what they are. They just say monster.
Yeah, to me, they look like a mix between like a warthog and a wolf.
Yeah, what I've just been describing them this whole time.
I think they definitely have more warthog to them than anything, because they even make like warthog spring sounds and stuff. But I think they also howl and do other like wolfy things.
Wolf hog.
Yeah, exactly. Wolf hog. Some of them are nearby, and this kind of just leads to this huge battle, because Spear jumps in and Fang. And I'll just say there's a huge battle. Huge battle among all of the
battle royale, some might say.
The warthogs and the giant one, and yeah.
And I knew that the mom wolf hog was huge. Like, you putting it next to Fang kind of gets you that perspective of how big it was. So
I feel like it's actually kind of surprising how often Fang is like much smaller than whatever she's fighting. You think like, oh, a T-Rex, obviously they're huge.
Yeah.
And obviously a female T-Rex is going to be smaller, sexual dimorphism, yada, yada, yada. But you'd still think she'd be pretty, but like every other episode of Primal, she's fighting something that's like twice her size. Like, here's this giant bear who's just randomly twice the size of a T-Rex. Here's a giant, I don't know, fucking giraffe that's twice the size of a T-Rex or something. It's just always like giant warthog that's twice the size of a T-Rex. It's like, damn, okay, fine. But it's always a little bit surprising.
This world is crazy. But for what it's worth, even though it goes pretty bad for the most part, I mean, they don't do really well, but they end up winning. They kill the giant mother and they kill all the little ones, but Mira gets attacked from the giant mother one. She gets knocked out, she gets flung across the cave, lands, and is just unconscious, and you know, Spear is there and yells, and he's like worried, and that's kind of where the episode ends.
Right. I mean, I will add a note there. I think it was one of the smaller warthogs that knocked her over, but regardless, the small child came over to like listen to her heartbeat and kind of like, oh, Mira, are you okay? And of course, they gave the, like, uh-oh, I don't hear a heartbeat. It's just over from here. Like, you know, We know because of season two that she's thinking going to be fine. She thinks going to have a miscarriage. Like, it's all going to work out. But she's always trying to build this up. Is she okay? Is she not okay? And obviously the little kid coming over to check on her and not, like, getting any signal or any heartbeat or whatever is supposed to, you know.
My question is this. Did we see her at the end of season one?
Well, she gave birth to a child, and the child grew up to be a young woman.
Okay, yeah. She could give like, birth right now. I'm saying, did we see her?
I have to double check. I don't think a premature child is going to manage well, especially without a, like, I mean, I guess the rest of the village could take care of.
I mean, I don't know. All I'm saying is, I want to know, did we see her at the end of season two? If we didn't see her, we don't know if she survives this.
I can't recall, but I would be beyond shocked if she actually died here.
But yeah, Crocodile is right in that the kid shows up or checks on her, but doesn't make any sort of indication that they hear a heartbeat or anything, right? So
he has a worried face when he, like, listens to her chest and goes up, and he's like, his face is filled with worry. But, you know.
Okay, well, and that's where we're at. I mean, they all died, right? All those, like, warthog monsters died, right?
I think so. Because the last one is the one that injured or maybe killed Mira.
Okay. Because I was thinking about this during this episode. It's like, they've been doing this for a while. They've been, like, snatching up humans. It's like, I mean, this is a good win for the humanity, I guess. Because these monsters have been, like, ravaging them for a while.
Yeah, Fang went down the big warthog. She, like, ripped her entire throat out. I was like, you know, it's pretty hardcore. It's nothing new for Primal, but that was pretty hardcore kill.
All right. I don't know if I have anything else to say about this episode. It was good. It was action-packed and very tenseful moments in this episode. But, yeah, kind of played out like I thought it was going to play out, I guess. All right. Let's move on to the next show, Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand Year Blood War, Core 3, Episode 12, Friend. It's Friend, but it's like,
yeah,
it's spelled normally, but just the last three letters are red, so to emphasize that this is the end of...
The end of the friend, yes.
Or end of the friendship, yeah, end of the friend, yeah, that works too.
So this episode is all about the backstory of, and I've been saying Jugrum this whole time, but I guess the J is an H sound. So it's Hugrum.
Or a Y sound?
Well, I thought it was, I guess it is kind of like a Y sound. You're right. Yugrum. I thought it was like an H sound, but I guess Y is probably more accurate.
But it is spelled with a J, but it's just not, not Jugrum or Jugrum, I guess.
At the very beginning of the episode, right before the credits, which only lasts for like 20 seconds, we see that they met up as children.
My first thought here is like, thinking like spatially, like, where is the Quincy like home world? Like, I guess it just exists like a different plane of existence or whatever. Sure. Somewhere.
Yes.
No, I think, so this was obviously before, like, I know there are questions about when and where we were. This is before, Thousand Years of Blood War, because you can see like a lot of, Yubao's like lieutenants are the people that Yamamoto killed back then. They used him again in his Bankai. So this is like 1,000 years ago or something. Like, really long time ago.
This is where I get confused, like, in terms of, like, I know there's some like magical elements. Where is, like, in the universe is it? It's not Earth. It's not the Soul Society. It's not heaven. It's just like some different plane of existence. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I can't remember if this is the plane, because they mentioned how there was a plane of existence. They named it. Like, overlaying on the Soul Society, or like Soul Society overlaying on top of it, because remember they used to hide in the shadows and come through that. That's how they would like move between the planes. But I can't remember if that happened after the Thousand Year Blood War or if that didn't happen beforehand.
Yeah. Well, wherever this is, they actually gave it a name in the episode, but it wasn't any place I've ever heard of. Also, this is another thing that's confusing to me. I know it's all the time, but I'm going to say it again. I think this is 200 years after Yuha Vaha's first defeat?
No, he hasn't fought Yamamoto yet because the people he has with him, his lieutenants, remember like that snobby guy and that gun girl and the big guy, like Yamamoto kills them in
when it was a thousand years ago, is what you're saying.
In the flashback, so Yamamoto and Yubaba fought a thousand years ago or something, and then he lost his powers. Many Quincy's were murdered.
Then, right?
Yeah, this is before that.
Okay, that's fine. That's what I'm asking. So,
Yeah.
My point is this,
and also, but sorry, I know we're gonna get to this, but I also get a little bit confused about the passage of time. Because they talk about these two children. They're like, we trained for 5 years, and they seem to have like a normal like adolescence, going from like, I don't know, you know, 14 years old to 18 years old or whatever, like, or whatever. But it seems like they age at like a pretty normal rate, even though they like live for hundreds of years. It's weird.
I assume that's like vampires and most supernatural creatures where they like the age from childhood to adolescence is like normal, and then they can become a young adult and just stay that way for thousands of years or whatever.
Probably, but I just noted that.
It's like they grew up in the span of like, you know, half a decade. And then I guess they've been alive for what, 1,100 years now?
Some of them, at least. Like, and I think Soul Society members work the same way. Like, I mean, the Soul Reapers, they age normally till young adulthood, then like stop aging and then like, I guess, actually age at the end, because Yamamoto obviously became an old man. He'd been alive for a really long time. So I think it's just like age normally through adolescence into young adulthood, stay that way for hundreds of thousands of years, and then maybe fall off near the end.
All right. Well, anyway, back in the present day after the title card, Yugo and Baz are fighting, and Baz calls he calls him Yugo. It's like a nickname. Yugram is his name, but he calls him Yugo. Which is something that Yugram doesn't like. And he calls him a traitor. You were a traitor back then. And then we cut back again to when they were kids. And we see that Baz is like really talented. He's able to summon like the ethereal like crossbow and stuff. He's able to do the Quincy magic. And for some reason, Yugram can't do it. He's like, I can't figure out how to do it. I'm not good enough. And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. I'll make you my squire. Even though I'm a genius and you're weak, I'll make you my squire. And then a little bit of time passes. And then we see that the clan, they called it a clan, the clan that Baz belongs to, burned down by Yuha Vaha. And this, of course, really enrages Baz.
What's it called? Thousand War in the Chinese legends, War of the Warring States or something. There've been multiple times in like Chinese history and Japanese history and other even European history where someone will go around trying to unify the nations or the clans or whatever, and he just starts going on a murdering spree. That's pretty common in history, honestly. Yu Bao is doing something like this, so
yeah. Well, this enrages Baz, and it makes Yugo very mad too. And so they kind of swear that they're going to team up and they're going to kill Yuha Vaha for what he did.
Yeah. Oh, I should make one point. It's also like, yeah, Baz's parents, Hugo's or Jugram's, I think, uncle gets killed. I think it's implied that Hugo's being abused by his uncle. Like, it's not necessarily outright stated, but kind of an implication. And then we see his uncle. Well, we don't see his uncle, but we hear him come on screen. It's very much implied that he has an abusive uncle of some sort, maybe in the, I don't know if it's a sexual way or just a physical way, but it's clearly a bad uncle. So, but yeah,
he has no family, basically, real like family that loves him or anything or cares about him. He's a loner. Anyway, we get like a little montage here, and they spent, like you said earlier, they spend 5 years training to get stronger, and we kind of see them grow up a little bit. Meanwhile, Yuha Vaha is meeting with one of his lieutenants, and he's like, we're getting ready. We're going to attack the Soul Society. In order to do this, I want to create a new division of Quincy's called the Stern Ritter.
He says with pinkies to his lips.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The thing you already know about from like 550 episodes ago. Ah, look, it all come together. Come, look at me right, says Kubo.
So Baz and Yugram hear about this and are like, this is perfect. This is perfect. If we join up with the Stern Ritter or we get in with it, we can get close to Yuha Vaha and kill him. So they go to the nearby village where, you know, some of the people are coming to recruit for the Stern Ritter. you know, Baz B's all big up in them. It's like, I can join, blah, blah, blah. Join, I want to join. They're like, oh, you little runt. Come back in 5 years. You're a weakling or whatever. He gets real mad. And he attacks. And then Yuhavaha himself shows up on horseback. And Baz is like, this is perfect. He's going to pick me. But he just walks right past Baz and goes right up to Yugo and says, you're the one I've been searching for. And that's the commercial break. All right, when we come back, Baz is like pissed off. He's like, why would you choose him? He's weakling. He doesn't even know how to do any of the Quincy powers. And then we get this kind of big lore drop. He says that that Yugram is a special kind of Quincy. He's just like Yuhavaha in that he can't actually, well, Yuhavaha is a little different, but he says he's similar in that every once in a while, there's a Quincy born that have the ability to give power to other Quincys.
Yeah, Yuhavaha mentions that like he gained the ability somehow to like give power away, but then like reclaim it.
Yeah. And also we see that over the first two seasons and whatnot. That's right. What he's basically, the shrifts and whatnot are things he's given to other Quincys. And of course he can take them back as he pleases.
But Yugram or Yugo at least has the power to like give the ability away. Like he's similar, like Seacolor said. When I was watching this, this stream, My Hero Academia, I don't know if anyone else, if it reminded them of that, the original One for All, I guess, where it's just like your only power is the power to give it away.
But this is kind of interesting too, because it explains, he's like, what about that boy over there, the one with the hot head? Has he been getting stronger the more he spends time with you? And this explains, Baz gets really mad about this, and he's like, screw you. And he tries to shoot Yuhavaha, but the arrow gets caught by Yugo. And then we kind of transition to Yugram has caught Baz's most latest arrow that was pointing at him.
Yep.
And then you guys can elaborate if you want to. I just wrote down the episode ends with Yugo just killing Baz B.
Not much else to say. You know, Baz B, whose full name we learned this episode is Bazard Black, you know, shoots some fire balls, shoots some fire beams, makes a sword out of fire. Yugram kind of does some fancy footwork and cuts some stuff up and eventually cuts off Bazard's arm and then stabs him in the stomach, and then he falls over and bleeds death.
Yeah, Baz really doesn't put up a fight, to be honest. Looks cool, but then he kind of
tries.
Yeah.
I would say he puts up a fight, or he tries to put up a fight and fails. He doesn't like roll over or give up for Yugram or whatever. He's like, he's trying. Yugram was kind of like effortlessly like just sword playing him, you know.
Yeah.
And then,
so in hindsight, though, this is interesting because it makes sense to me now why, and this may not be why, but I feel like the reason Yuhavaha chose Uryu to be his successor is because Uryu is like a true Quincy, whereas he was just probably using Yugram for power, to get powerful. And that's it. That's the episode. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, there's only two episodes left.
I would say they're all true Quincy's. Why Yuba chose Uryu is not something that's going to be elaborated upon till the fourth core, which, as I really mentioned before, is going to have a lot of stuff added onto it. Because it was kind of like, I think, touched upon in manga at the very end. But again, like that part of the manga is going to be bolstered if the next, if the last season, so...
Well, that's kind of why I prefaced it by saying I could be wrong. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that's my theory.
Okay, fair.
Yeah, and I mean, I was kind of expecting to see some of the other Quincy fights, but I guess I'm saving that for the next episode. But you're right. Two episodes left, right? It's only two, really? Is that right?
I think yes. So.
So there's 14 episodes in this core? Okay.
So if it goes out saying we'll start the Gerard and Askin fights, we'll start them, but we won't finish them this season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is 14 episodes. That is kind of an awkward
problem. Yeah, that's odd.
Yeah, it's like, huh. it's that's what it is.
Interesting. Okay. Oh, that is it for Bleach. Baz B is dead. And now we know what Yugram's deal is. So let's move on to the two new shows on the block, Blue Lock. Talk, Episode 3, Soccer's Zero. So it starts out, and Ego is telling them that this upcoming match is, his design for this match is to, quote, create a battle, or to have a battle to create soccer from zero. And this kind of leaves our protagonist scratching his head. Like, what does that mean? We don't know what that means.
I'll be honest, I still don't entirely know what that means by the end of the episode, even though there was...
Yeah, they tried to explain it
himself, but, you know, we'll get into that
shortly. Yeah, we'll kind of cover it a little bit here. I agree with you. I don't completely get it, but I'll try to give my thoughts as we go. But anyway, as they're getting into the match, we do learn that there's a new special rule that's going to be part of this match, and it's that even if your team loses, if you're the top scorer or best player on your team, losing team's best player or top scorer is not automatically evicted from Blue Lock. They're not locked out. So this obviously has a very dramatic effect on our team. So when the game starts, everyone on Team Z just starts stealing the ball from each other because they want to be the one who makes a goal in order to stay in the program.
That was legitimately some of the worst soccer I've ever seen in my entire life. I'll think of myself like, wow, this is terrible soccer. Like, good Lord.
Yeah. Like, this is obviously what was going to happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I played soccer in high school. I played a little bit in college. I've obviously watched soccer. I wouldn't have a aficionado, but I guess I have some familiarity with sport. That's legit in life regarding soccer. Like, oh, so bad. I mean, that was the point. But I'm just, like, stunned how, like, terrible displayed I was.
Yeah. Well, and when you've got, like, even your own teammates being like, give me the ball or I'll kill you, it's kind of like, okay, what are you going to do? What do you expect? You know, that kind of thing. Meanwhile, the other team, Team X, they've got this one really badass player on their team called Baru, and he calls himself, I'm the king. I'm the king of this field. And he ends up getting a couple of, like, goals in. And yeah. Just keeps scoring. And they're like, because it's, they kind of lead into this, it's, or after the commercial break, but I'll just say it here, that because this guy is stepping up and it's motivating his team to win, and they're getting, you know, Team Z is getting their ass handed to them here.
Yeah, like the other team was like fucking, was equally on equally pathetic display to start with. This guy scores, and then everyone else on the other team gets their shit together, full, you know, and then they start actually working like a team because they have like something to shoot for, or a goal, or, you know, a king basically to get them all in line. And so, yeah, that helps them like actually play the game of soccer.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where they're going with this, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in a minute, but, you know, it's like, oh, if we start working like a team with teamwork, it starts to work better, you know? It's like, I think people already figured this out in the game. Like, they try to frame it later, and this is basically like the end of the episode where it's like, you need to have, I don't know, like some top dog scorer that like the team is sort of like found the way they sort of, you know, kind of position this. But it's kind of just like, I don't fully get where it's like, you can't do teamwork. It's everyone from the cells. Everyone has to be a scorer. Then when they try to do that, it like doesn't work. And they're like, wait, what if we work as a team? It's like, I don't know. It feels like they're trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. I think it's the idea. It's like I said, they're set up in a match where because they all do pick positions, you know, and that's kind of hurting them as well.
I mean, they're all strikers, so like that's the experience.
Right. When we come back from the commercial break, Bachiro and Isagi kind of have a little aside for a moment, and they're like, hey, let's, you know, this isn't working, but how about just you and me? You should get a score in if we just work together. And he's like, okay, let's do it. And
Team Monster. You know,
Team Monster. Bachiro ends up getting the ball to Isagi, and Isagi's getting close to the goal, and he's getting ready to knock it in, but then he ends up just sort of, it's weird. He passes the ball to some other player on their team. Why did I do that? I don't know what happened. He's kind of like, is this a monster moment where his monster took over, I'm guessing?
Yeah, he kind of frames it like, you know, he wasn't even thinking. It was like pure instinct. Yeah. So they probably like rationalize that in universe as like his monster psyche, whatever.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
And just to note these character names, like I'm trying, you know, just trying to get used to who all these characters are. The guy he passed to, who I guess is like like the big muscle head guy, his name is Kunigami. And then the other guy who was just like angry all the time, you know who I'm talking about. His name is Raichi. So Isagi passed the ball to Kunigami instead of Raichi. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to get some of the names because we're gonna like deal with these characters.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that too, because like Raichi is especially mad because he's like, I was wide open and you didn't get it to me. I could have got it in there. He's really mad to make the score. Because again, and there's this rule that if you score, even if your team loses, you're going to be like protected.
And they kind of make also a point. They also kind of make a point that it seems like, you know, logically or maybe by like, you know, the analytics or whatever, he probably should have passed to Raichi, had a maybe a better shot. But like because of the monster in his head, like he was working by instinct, he threw it to Kunigami and he was able to make the goal regardless. So it's kind of like trust your head more than the or trust your monster more than the analytics, I guess.
Under the ball or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, they end up getting that goal, but it's at the end of the game. So they lose their first game. They've lost. And so they go back to the locker room and they're all beating each other up over this. And Isagi's just thinking to himself, like, what? There's got to be a lesson in this. And I'm going to read out loud here what my notes say. So he's like thinking, I think I know what it means. We have to turn a zero into a one. And then Ego comes onto the screen and he's like, ah, yes, that's exactly right. This is what this is all about. You have to. And then he explains how to turn a zero into one. I didn't write down the explanation. I just wrote down, he explains how to turn a zero to a one. And then he says, to win, they will each have to use their unique weapons, quote unquote weapons. Everyone has their own unique weapons, and you'll have to use those to win.
Whatever you say, Ego.
I don't know what that means.
I rewatched it or something would make sense, but it kind of just felt like inspirational gobbledygook. It was supposed to sound more profound than it actually was. As I think you guys were saying, there's a lot of reinventing the wheel here. But
yeah, I tried really hard in that sequence when Ego was explaining the zero to one and the meaning of the episode title. And it was like nonsense. So maybe on a rewatch, it would make more sense. I don't know.
Yeah. So Isagi tries to like, kind of like explain to himself, Ego's explanation and Isagi's explanation to him, like to himself is something along the lines of like each team needs like some sort of like striker pillar, like they need the guy to be, you know, like that everyone else kind of revolves around to be like the top dog kind of thing. And he kind of sees that in Baru and this
like team every pack and alpha basically.
Yeah, but also just kind of like that's also kind of like how normal soccer works. You usually have like an ace scorer on the team. Like this isn't necessarily a new phenomenon or new like
right. But so this like thing where he's talking about making a zero a one, I thought he was talking about the score, but maybe he's not talking about the score.
I think he was starting with the score and then translating that into a broader metaphor.
Yeah,
a metaphor that completely goes over my head.
I mean, it also probably didn't help that like Bacho's naked ass was out on screen for half the time, and it's probably a distraction to some people. It's just like, I don't know, it's kind of weird justification, but
you know what? That's fine. You mentioned it. I will say that I don't think I noticed it. And that may be like my mind just tuning that aspect of the show out now. I'm like not paying attention to it.
The show is doing what it's doing. It's obviously, I'm not criticizing it's doing what it's doing, no. But I just thought it was a little humorous given that juxtaposition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, but yeah, they showed all the characters like shirtless and sweaty, you know. So,
they do that.
And then Bachura is, you know, they actually show him, yeah, briefly. He doesn't even have pants on. I think even some guy even might mention, like, you know, kind of like, do you have to do that or whatever? But so I didn't watch this live. I watched separate. But did they air like the Omake at the end?
Yeah, they did.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it was like a lot about them training, and I think the last place guy was like Ichiro or something, whatever, sleeps weird, but he was doing the whole like faking injury. Then in the episode, he sleeps like a really weird guy, weird pose.
Yeah, it was just kind of goofy stuff. Like the guy with the long hair is just like, I gotta take care of my hair. And then one guy's like, I'm, you know, washing my face or skincare. It's just,
yeah, you know, skincare doing the avocado cream or something. And like, but he didn't have slices that he needed that touch, cucumber slices.
And Seda, you do you, but it's actually pronounced omake.
Or Omake. Sorry, I was wondering. Yeah. I didn't know.
Say to say.
I said Omake. I know, even though Isan usually said it, are said in Japanese, so I should have known that.
Yeah, that's all right. Oh, they also showed the full opening, didn't they?
No, sped up.
Oh, it was sped up. Okay, no, Tokyo Revengers they did. But anyway.
Yes, Tokyo Revengers showed a full opening. But the Blue Lock opening was sped up.
The thing, though, is that, like, I was about to say is that Blue Lock showing the eye catches and showing the Omake at the end, if I had to guess why this is happening, it's probably because the particular distributor, you know what I mean? Like, each distributor is different, and they're just like, oh, nobody told us to cut this out, so we're keeping it.
Yeah, because both Blue Lock and Tokyo Revengers are from, like, Sony or something, right?
Well, a bunch.
They have, like, Sony on the credits.
Yeah, well, Bandai Namco and a whole bunch of...
There's a lot of logos. Like, which logo actually takes care of this? I don't know.
But I'm pretty sure they're both... I think part of the reason Toonami got both these shows, I think they have the same distribution channels, it looks like to me. So, like, whatever distributor they talk with to get shows, that single distributor had both these shows to work out with them. So I think that's part of the reason why they came to Block as a package.
Well, as far as this episode goes of Blue Lock, it's Blue Lock. I don't have anything else to say about it. I don't hate it, but I'm also just sort of like, okay, Blue Lock.
I agree with that.
It is what it is. Well, let's move on then.
I do have for now, but I just want to say two quick things. A, Takamichi is the luckiest motherfucker on this planet. As in, like, 99 out of 100 times his plan would just ended up him getting his skull broken in, but, you know, it didn't because we need the show to actually proceed. And two, for One Piece, nominate that song Brooke was singing for Worst Moment, because all I could think about the whole thing was I wanted to end. I hate it. It made me mad. You know that clip from Mystery Science Theater or 3000 or whatever, where some guy screaming at the projector screen?
Yeah, that's...
End!
All righty. Well, thanks for being here tonight.
All right, my pleasure. I'll talk to you guys later.
Tokyo Revengers, Episode 3, Resolve. This episode starts up where we left off last one. It's Takamichi versus Kiyomasa. And Kiyomasa, being the giant 7-foot, 14-year-old that he is, beats the crap out of Takamichi here. But Takamichi isn't falling. Holds his ground. He keeps kind of chuckling and laughing. He's like, you can beat me all you want. I'm not going to give up.
Yeah, he has a shonen protagonist powers.
Yeah.
There's no way he can, like, win this fight, but he has, like, the willpower to never give up and does not go down and whatnot.
It's cringe, but I do appreciate it from the standpoint of, like, him changing the course of his life and being like, I'm not going to be a coward anymore, that kind of thing. That's good, at least.
He even kind of yells to himself, like, I have to make up for the last 12 to anyone else there. They're like, what are you talking about? So.
Yeah, one of his friends, like, he's gone crazy. Kiyomasa's like, get my bat. And then one of the guys goes to get his bat, but that's when this big, tall guy with a shaven head and a dragon tattoo on the side of his head comes walking up, and everybody's like, oh my god, it's Draken! And then right behind Draken is this much shorter, younger-looking guy. And they're like, holy shit, it's Mikey Sano! Mikey Sano, the head of Tokyo Manji.
Now, I was confused for a moment because these two characters are in the opening of this season. And I was thinking, like, you know, just kind of still putting, you know, faces to character names. Like, I thought these two characters were the two, like, leaders that they didn't want to meet. And I was wait. But yeah, I wrote down the names too. So because we always have trouble with names. But yeah, it's Mikey. I guess his full name is Manjiro, but they go by Mikey. And then the nickname of the other guy, the big guy, is Draken. So.
Right. And this, what you just talked about, how, like, the other bad guy who's not Sano that Takamichi has to find actually being, like, a different character is really great, because this episode kind of won me over on the show a little bit, and I'll explain as I go along. But I like this a lot more now, where they're going with this, because you're right, it subverted my expectations in a very good way. Anyway, Mikey Sano is there, and he kind of walks past. Everybody has to bow to him, of course. Kiyomasa is like bowing, and everybody has to bow. And he just walks right up to Takamichi. He's like, "What's your name?" And he's like, "I'm Takamichi," whatever his last name is. He says, "Oh, I think we're going to be really good friends, Takamichi." He calls him Takamichi, is like a pet name.
Takamichi.
Or Michi. You're right. It's Michi. Yeah. But at this moment, you're kind of like, "Oh, this guy's a little scary. You know, I'm not sure what to think." And then Draken starts beating the crap out of Kiyomasa. And he's like, "Don't go starting fight clubs without my permission. I don't want you doing that." That's what Sano says. And so Kiyomasa kind of gets his hand into him, and everybody kind of scatters after that. That's where like the first commercial break happens. When we come back, Takamichi's on his way to school, but Hinata is there, and she ends up walking to school with him, and they have a nice conversation. And then Takamichi's in class when suddenly he hears a bunch of ruckus outside, and in comes Wansi in. The teacher's like, "Excuse me, I'm having a class here." He just doesn't care. And he's sort of like bullying people in the school, like the guys in the hallway that he's beat up, that Draken is beat up. And he's like, "All right, everybody lay down." And they're like, "Why?" And then they just start walking on them. And at this point, I'm still like, "God, these guys are kind of assholes."
They have a lot of authority, apparently, where they can just beat up a bunch of people and like the teachers don't care, can't get involved. I don't know.
From my understanding, there is a little bit of truth to this ridiculousness. I don't think they could go this far. But I do know that in Japan, it is a thing that like teachers are very, very, very much not allowed to like step up and do things. It's much different than in America, where in Japan, apparently, like if a student does something rash, or they're not allowed to discipline students as much as you think they can. So they're kind of like often portrayed, and I think right, like realistically, in that they don't stop students from being outrageous like this. I don't know if they would go this far, but
there's a kernel of truth.
Yes. I've definitely read people about people's real life experiences going to Japanese schools and learning about how teachers are not allowed to discipline students or to really kind of do anything really.
Yeah. Like I know some people who, like a lot of English teachers in Japan are from, you know, English speaking countries. Like I have friends who grew up in America and now live in Japan and teach there. So they have these sorts of stories. Like, here's what it actually is like. So
Sano's like, "Come on, Takamichi, let's go. We're going to go." And he kind of like, Takamichi's kind of being drug along by the hand here. You know, it's like, "Oh God, I got to do this. I'm going to get in trouble, whatever. But I got to do these. These guys are tough, you know, whatever." And then in comes walking Hinata. And Hinata walks right up to Sano and just without a word, just slaps him. And Sano kind of gives her a look.
And then Draken is the one who's Draken puts his like arm, I'm trying to remember exactly what it is. He like puts his hand on Hinata's shoulder, but then Takamichi puts his hand on his shoulder or something like that, where he's like, "Don't take your hand off of her," or whatever.
Yes, that's exactly what happens. And Takamichi looks at him. And like Draken's like, "What the, do you even know what you're doing?" And Takamichi's like, "You will not touch her again. You can beat me all to hell, but you will not touch her." And both really mad. He's like, "Oh," and then like Sano turns to him and he's like, "Oh, I thought you were cool, but I guess you decided to die." And he starts to walk. And then he's like, "Psych, I'm just fooling with you. I'm just playing with you."
Yeah. In actuality, Mikey is pretty much like, he's actually like kind of sold. These two characters like stood up for each other. And that, I like that kind of thing. So,
yes, this is where the whole like show's like vibe changed for me, because I was expecting full on that these two were going to be complete and utter the worst kind of assholes. But no, they actually have a conscience. And even though Sano just got slapped in the face by Hinata, he's like, he respects her for it. He's like, "That was actually pretty cool what you did standing up for him." And I'm like, "What the fuck is going on here?" I was kind of like shocked. And then we kind of cut to the next, like we kind of fast forward for like a minute or two, and then we're like outside. And then we see like Hinata apologizing to Sano. It's like, "I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry." And he's like, "Ah, don't worry about it. I'm glad you guys are standing up for each other. You're good kids." And, you know, and Takamichi is also kind of dumbfounded. "I thought we were dead meat. And these guys are kind of cool." And Yes, my notes say Sano is nice.
Yeah, and there's a part of this finale scene that I actually snorted at because I thought it was kind of ridiculous, but I'll get to that in a second. But Takemichi is kind of talking to himself, and he kind of comes to the conclusion, okay, these two characters that are going to meet, that's Mikey Sano and the other character, Kisaki, like, he actually says there's no way that Sano is, like, the leader of the Tokyo Manchi gang in the present day, because there's no way he would crash a truck into a building and kill people. So he kind of comes to the conclusion, like, it must be the other guy who is the problem maker, like the guy who basically is the source of the problem we're trying to solve. And Sano can't be the problem. So he's kind of thinking to himself that, you know, Sano is fine, but it's the other guy that they need to basically worry about. And then that's kind of where the episode ends, is they cross paths.
Yeah. Right before that, though, we do get like a brief scene where they're on bicycles and Takemichi's on a bike and he's got Sano on the back and then being followed by Draken. And he asks him, like, so why did you stand up for me? And this is where he gets the little flashback. He thinks back to the moment where Sano said, don't have the fight club. Sano said, you know, don't pick on, you know, I stand, you know, you're a good kid, whatever. And he kind of realizes, that's when he realizes, he's like, oh, this guy's got a conscience. And he's like, well, why did you stand up for me? And he says, well, you know, you remind me of my older bro.
Yep.
And when he was the head of the gang, things were different. And then he says, Sano says, I want to make a new era where delinquents will clean up their messes.
That's the line I snorted at. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to make a new era for delinquents. I'm like, okay. It's silly.
And it's also like, I don't really quite get it, because it's like, okay, he wants there to be delinquents in the world, but he also I guess he's just saying he doesn't want them to be like,
they're not bad.
Yeah. They're just mildly bad delinquents, I guess. Or maybe it's like a thing where it's like, they want to be free. Like biker gangs are free to do what they want, but as long as they don't hurt people, maybe something like that. Anyway, the point is, he's trying to create a new gentler type of gang, I guess is what you could say.
Yeah, but this you guessed properly at the part I snorted at. It's just kind of like, yeah. maybe the connotation, the Japanese word for delinquent, which I think is bancho, like that connotation might be slightly different than the English word delinquent. I don't know. Yeah. Like there might be a connotation or a tone that's lost. But if you're delinquents, but you're not like, if you're not like causing problems and you're just, you know, that's not that, then you're just like friends. Like, I don't know.
And like, again, I'm thinking back to earlier in the episode, bullied a bunch of people. Like, he straight up bullied a bunch of people. Yeah. So he's okay with bullying people, but I don't think he's okay with, like, you know, bloodying people or doing things that like breaks up, you know, harms real good people or something like that, I guess.
Or namely eventually kills a woman in the future.
Right. So yeah, that's kind of set up. So, and yeah, you're like you said, at the very final scene, we see the young version of that other guy who probably a scumbag, just the way he looks. But yeah, I think that's where we're going. I was thinking back to the opening too. Again, they did show the full opening for the episode, which is maybe a one-time thing. We'll see. It ends with Sano and Draken like turning to Miley. Like, it's pretty clear to me that these guys are not going to like be evil, I don't think.
Yeah. And the opening also shows Takemichi in like a different outfit. I'm assuming he like joins the gang and he's like, that's his Tokyo Manji gang outfit.
Yeah. One more thought I had too. Kiyomasa had killed Takemichi. What happens? Does he just, does that rewrite all of history then? I guess it has to. He can die, right? I'm assuming he can die.
Who knows?
I think he can. He has to be able to die in the same way that Naota can live.
Yeah.
All right. But anyway, overall, I am a little more interested in this show now that this episode has occurred, because I think I like these two new characters. I want there to be more good people in this show, and we just got two new ones that are, again, they're not like angels or anything, but they're clearly better than almost all the other thugs we've run into. So that's good.
I wonder if Takemichi's friend group is like, do they stick around? Are any of them important? Or are they just kind of like, you know, are they characters that just kind of get lost? Because I don't know if they're in the opening. I don't know. Like, are they important characters? I don't know if this is really interesting or not. But the redhead character, he pulls out a knife at one point, like he's about to. Yeah. like stab someone, but he doesn't, and he kind of puts it away because Sano shows up right then. But I'm wondering, like, you know, is that a foreshadowing, or is that, you know, an insight into this character that might come back later, or is that just, you know, a throwaway thing in this character doesn't matter? I don't know.
I think that's an interesting thing to mention, because you're right. You know, for all the good changes that Takemichi might be making, he may be harming the futures of his friends. So maybe that'll play out in the future. We'll see. But it also could be that these guys are just for the beginning, and now that Takemichi's like rising in the ranks, maybe they'll go by the wayside. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I'm curious, because right now those his friend characters are kind of like whoever's, you know, they're just kind of the peanut gallery. They kind of have lines here and there, and, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know if they're important or not, or if they will be.
So overall, definitely I'm more interested in this than I am Blue Lock.
I like on the last episode, I talked curious about what they're going to do with Hinata, and she was talking about, like, I'm going to protect you and whatnot. And this episode, I kind of like where they went with her, where she stood up for him and literally slapped, you know, the boss of the, you know, infamous gang. And, you know, she had the bravery to, like, do that. Although, Takemichi does, like, remark that she's shaking.
That's fine.
I think that was actually, well, I mean, like, I think that's kind of interesting to show that, like, she was scared, but she, like, you know, slapped him anyway. Like, she shut up. She's, you know, she knew that that's what she says she decided to do to protect Takemichi. So
I agree. Completely. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. Hinata stepped up like she said she would. She was more bold and brave than her boyfriend, which gave him courage. Yeah. Great. Great bit of characterization. I like that a lot. Again, way more stuff going on in this show than Blue Lock. Goes without saying, I guess, but yeah. Well, let's move on to the final show, or the final premiere of the block, One Piece. One Piece, episode 765. Let's go meet Master Cat Viper. Let's do that. But first, on our way, let's get attacked by a bunch of bee things called Tsuchis, where we all get to fight and use our special moves in a obviously blatant, terrible filler battle.
So when I saw this, the very first thing that came to my mind was Inuyasha. It's like it's Naraku's poisonous insects, because this is pretty much what happened, is they just showed up and they didn't fight them, but
this sequence might be the most egregiously filler segment I think I may have seen in any show ever. Like, so banal and so uninventive. It's just like, here's a bunch of random nothings and everybody use their cool moves and let's look cool for 30-40 seconds to get some time out of this, and then the moment the battle's over, they're literally back on those big crocodile things like nothing happened.
Yep.
I was just laughing, it was so bad.
So in Inuyasha, they're called the Saimyosho. I think they call them the show, but I just remember in Inuyasha, which is kind of a little bit more of a monster of the formatting, at least starting out, like, it felt like every episode someone explains it's Naraku's poison insects, and it's just those bees, and they don't necessarily fight them, but they're always just around. So that's what I thought of when I saw this in One Piece, is I just thought of these things.
But these things are like, they don't have any, there's nothing. Yeah. It's, oh my god, it's so bad. Anyway, when we come back to canon, it doesn't get a whole lot better, because now Brooke decides to sing a song about Cat Viper, and we get this, like, 2-minute long song.
It's longer than that.
As you heard earlier, Crocodile was like, end. It was pretty bad. I mean, it's a joke, but
It's like self-aware, but that doesn't necessarily make it better.
No.
I think they even mention, like, so he's singing the song, and it starts out with, like, the over let's go see Capper or something. And then I think Nami or someone mentions, like, you just said the same thing over and over. And I thought that was just going to be, like, the end. Like, that was it. That was the bit. But that was only, like, the halfway point, because then he keeps going and, like, okay, now he's singing different lyrics, but it still just keeps going. And yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking this whole time, is like, how is Brook a superstar? He's not that creative.
I feel like the monkey's paw curled in that, like,
yeah.
During an earlier scene, he's like, let me play a song. And he played, like, Binks Brew or Binks Sake again. Like, he needs new material. Well, he got new material. This is what I asked for.
This is a minor complaint about One Piece, but I'll just say it right now because I've never said it. I have never once ever thought that Brook is a competent musician, ever. Even back, like, playing his concert at Saba Odi, I'm like, he's not good. This isn't great. This is bad. He's always been bad musician to me. I've never liked any songs he's ever sung. I mean,
yeah,
whatever.
I'm with you.
It's One Piece. I'm not going to get bent over backward about that, but I just putting it out there. Brook, not talented. Brook lovers are going to hate that, but that's how I feel. Well, like I said, the song goes on and on until we get to the commercial. We come back from the commercial and they've arrived where Cat Viper is, and everybody's greeting them, including Pedro, who's standing up in the tree. And I did not know this or remember this, but his name is Treetop Pedro.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. I mean, like, Treetop, that's his name? Okay. Anyway, he jumps down. He greets them. They walk in, and Cat Viper is taking a bath.
Before they do this, there's like a maybe a minute long scene where Chopper is like infatuated for a moment with like a female mink nurse. And yes. I was like, this feels out of character. Is this filler or is this like stretched out?
This is not filler.
Oh, yeah, I know we've seen her before, but like this is the first time Chopper has shown like any sort of like interest in another person like this, I think. Like,
yes.
You know, he's got friends and whatnot. Like, oh, this is a person that he's like actually like infatuated with and has little hard eyes and everything. So
yeah, I think somebody in the thread was just like, if there was any character it would be okay for Chopper to be infatuated with, this makes
Chopper
sense.
Is a reindeer, so
he's also a teenager apparently.
Yeah,
so oh, okay. yes this I think they've said her name. I think this is the first time we've seen her.
We might have seen her in like in a crowd shot or like in the background.
Okay,
and
maybe
she said a few lines here and there, but
all right, her name is Milky.
Okay,
and she sticks around,
but yeah, it just kind of stuck out to me, like, oh, this like Chopper with hard eyes. I don't know if he's ever had like hard eyes like this before. So yeah.
No. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, when they walk in, Chopper's pissed off. He's like, you shouldn't be doing that. Your wounds are going to open up. He gets out and he starts eating lasagna. I forgot he did this. I mean, it's a Garfield joke, right? It has to be.
Yeah, it has to. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it has to be. He's going to complain about Mondays in the next episode.
Maybe. I don't know if they have Mondays, but maybe.
Oh, yeah. Do they have days of the week?
And then he does other cat things. Like, he plays with balls. Like, he'll be, like, serious one moment, and then, like, a ball come bouncing in the room, and he'll be like, ooh, and he goes.
And he's done this before. There was, I forget what it was. I forget if it was, like, a little animal or a bug or something that he got, like easily distracted because he is a cat.
Chopper tries to give him an injection to heal him because all his wounds opened up again. And he asks, like, Nami, I think, to be like, wave this cat tail in front of me so that I get distracted.
It's Robin. None of that matters.
Oh, Robin.
Like,
okay.
Yeah. The little foxtail plant, just waving it around because he's a cat. He's easily distracted.
And then we kind of cut over to another area and we see Peckham's is recovering.
Yeah, he's alive. He says something like he used his power to prevent damage. It's like, what even is his power?
Oh, did he say that?
Something like that.
You know what? I don't remember.
But I'm like, what is it? I don't even remember what he does. Like, even if you ask me, like, is he a devil fruit user? Like, I don't.
I'm gonna look it up and then I'll tell you if he's used it or not.
I swear he said something.
I do remember his power now. I don't think we've seen it.
He says something like used his power to prevent any more damage. Like,
yeah,
somehow that's how
he totally can.
Alive.
He totally can, based on his power, but I don't think he's actually demonstrated it yet, so.
Okay. I mean, if he's shown it, I forgot.
Which no, is very possible. I don't think he's shown it. I think we just haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, he's better, and he's talking with them. And they kind of ask him a bunch of questions like, what's the deal with Sanji? And like, why is Sanji going? And what's the deal? And he explains that Sanji's father is the head of Germa 66.
Otherwise known as the Warmongers. So the way that I understood it was there's this group of people called the Warmongers, the name for Germa 66, or Germa 66 is the way he phrased, the way he says it. And the Vindicators are like assassin group.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah, Germa 66.
They're called the Warmongers, Germa 66. That's the same thing, just different names. And then like the Smokes are the assassins of that group. But I assume there's other people in Germa 66 that are not assassins. There are other types of underworld whatevers. But I'm assuming we'll learn more about that.
And one other thing that Nami says is she's like, oh, I thought that Germa 66 was just a fairy tale.
Whatever anyone says that, yeah, in any show or media, like not just a fairy tale.
Peckham's like, no, they're very real and they're very powerful.
Now I'm wondering, like, have Germa 66 or Warmongers ever been mentioned before? In passing, just a quick drop here or there, because sometimes One Piece does that. I don't know.
I don't think they're not called Warmongers. I think that's just the label, like that's what they are. I don't think they're just Germa 66. I think he's just saying they are Warmongers, not that that's what they're called.
According to the fandom wiki, Germa 66, also known as the Warmongers, is both the military branch of the German kingdom, blah, blah, blah. I probably shouldn't read anymore. But
I don't remember that. Okay. That's I don't think they say it very often.
Oh, okay. I just Peckham said it here, so I wrote it down.
That's fair enough. So, yeah. And you were right, and I'm wrong. I did not remember that being them being called that. That's interesting. Now, Germa 66 is what you'll hear over and over and over going forward. So, but and you're like, and now Peckham's is like, oh no, they're very real. And then he explains that this is the deal, is that the wedding is set up by the head, or Sanji's father, of Germa 66.
So. Now,
Double six.
We kind of already know why Big Mom would want Sanji to marry in, or at least why would Big Mom want this? Why would she marry off one of her daughters? And the way they kind of explain it is, if a member of the Straw Hats marries into the Big Mom family pirates or whatever, Charlotte's the name? Is that her name? Whatever. That gives them some sort of authority over the Straw Hats if that happens. That's kind of seems a little like, wait, just because one of your characters is forced to marry, does that mean the other characters are like at your whim now? But that's the way they sort of like framed it. And that's why they kind of think, I wonder if Sanji went off on his own. That's the way they kind of frame it, is that we don't want this marriage to happen because that gives Big Mom some like leverage. But the thing that I don't know, this is my main point, is I'm not sure why Sanji's father wants Sanji to marry into the Big Mom family. Like, that's the piece I'm missing, and I'm assuming that'll be touched on. Like, I don't know what he gets out of it.
Yeah, I won't comment on this. It would be too.
I mean, I'm assuming that hasn't been. I'm assuming that has to be revealed at some point. But that's the thing I'm curious about, is what do the Vince Smokes want? Because we know right now. I mean, two episodes ago, we knew them, and now we know barely anything about them. Yeah, we'll get to it.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get to it. By the way, in order to like check on like where we were in the arc, I went ahead and looked at the episode list, and it did remind me that there is an upcoming filler arc between the end of Zoe and the next arc, and it's actually like one of the better like filler arcs. I mean, I wouldn't say it's amazing or anything, but it's a filler arc that's actually kind of like fans are kind of like, oh, that's all right.
The Return of Bill.
No, it's nothing like that. It's much better than that, thankfully.
We never saw Bill die. He just kind of like got swallowed up by an exploding island. So he might come back.
If it gives you any comfort, you will never see Bill again. I can assure you of that. I'll give you that spoiler. I don't think Bill ever shows up again. He's an idiot. If he did show up, I would certainly remember that, I think. No, but anyway, my point being, though, is that we're getting close. We're getting closer to the end of Zoe.
Oh, yeah. I'm just kind of looking at a list briefly here. I'm being careful not to look at the titles too much, even though the titles are whatever. It's like we're roughly about halfway through the arc. So,
like I've been saying, there's like a couple of big revelations that happen. I like Carrot, but like the Minx aren't the big thing. To me, it's like the bigger world building that happens in this arc. And there's a couple more that are coming. So, And that is One Piece for this week. Yeah. Cat Viper Songs, Terrible Filler, and Jermis Double Six. All right. Let's talk about flavor alerts.
Flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Worst moment, Cat Viper Song.
Well, we can do it, even if it gets voted out later. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
We don't know how to at least have a nomination.
Exactly. I'm fine with it. We were all cringing. I think in the thread, there were people who were like equally like, make it stop.
I think the animation in Bleach was pretty good, but I felt like the fight was kind of one-sided and short. Like Basby kind of got, he like threw a couple of punches, or not literal punches, but fire punches and fire swords and whatever, but he didn't, there was like bits and bursts of good animation, but I felt like it was very brief. So
the fight itself wasn't as much as the flashback. So again, I still feel like it's too soon for these two new shows, really. I can't.
Yeah. No character or voice sticks out to me. Maybe Ito's voice, like just that sort of, you know, performance for that sort of character. I think he kind of pulls it off, but, you know, we can sit on it. We have plenty of episodes to wait. Best character female. Like what are our options? Hinata.
Exactly. That's it.
Probably too soon to like nominate, but like there's not a lot of choice. There's like Mira, maybe. So
yeah. Oh yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
We're gonna be really lopsided this year.
I'll be honest with you, when it comes to Primal, even though I know it's a really good show, I have a hard time thinking of like nominatable things from it. I will say I did notice in this particular episode, while again, not like amazing or I thought it's the music in this episode a lot.
Yeah.
I was like listening at the music. I was like, oh yeah, there's music here. I don't know. But again, not amazing. It was just like, oh, it's very appropriate music. Voice acting in Bleach or in Primal.
Yeah. Mira says like Mira and like, she says like the same word, which apparently means like a bunch of different things. It's like la.
Yeah, she said like lu or la. Yeah, or something like that.
Like that. Like
la. All right. Okay. Do it for this episode of the Toonami 8 podcast. Thank you very much for being here, Seda.
Yep, no problem.
I'm going to thank Crocodile for being here earlier as well. And we'll be back next week. We're getting close to Rooster Fighter, so we'll see that very soon. So. But until next week, later.